This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm conducting a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Judith Traeger. Judith is in Longmont, Colorado, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we are conducting this interview over the telephone. Today's date is September 16th, 2008. It is now 11:05 in the morning. Judith, thank you for taking time out of your day to do this interview with me. Please tell me about your quilt, September.
Well, it's part of a series that I've been working on for, maybe 5 or 6 years. And I've been really interested in changes in the seasons. And I've done two specific season pieces. One is called Equinox, and it hangs in the home of some people in Minnesota. And that quilt is 12 feet long by 3 feet high. It's a huge wall that they wanted me to put it on. So it's a diptych. So it's a very, very interesting quilt. But this one actually grew out of a desire to show the changes in the season. In September, everything sort of happens. It's still summer, but especially where we live in Colorado, we began to get the aspens change colors very, very early. And it happens the very beginning of September. So I wanted to catalog that. And also, I am, I'm getting much older, and I'm interested in, sort of cataloging how my life is changing. And so going from the greens and reds and blues to the golds is really a very interesting process. So it's both physical and metaphorical.
How do you use this quilt?
How do I use it?
Mm-hmm.
It's hanging on the wall. I only make art quilts. Well, that's not exactly true. I occasionally make a bed quilt when somebody is in dire need. But I work for clients, and most of my clients are hospitals. This September is a brand new quilt. I finished it late spring and have not shown it yet. It's about to be shown. Right now I'm doing an open studio weekend with our local artists here this coming weekend, September 20th and 21st, and I'll be using that as a centerpiece for the rest of the quilts that will be hanging.
Do you typically work in a series?
Yes, I do. And it's been a wild ride in terms of series. When I first started doing art quilts in the 1970s, I was really more interested in exploring techniques and, because I was a painter, how I could go from the medium, my chosen medium, which was paint, to the medium of my heart, which was fiber. And I found that if I worked on one thing, developed it really well, and then moved on to the next thing, I learned a whole lot more from my work. I had a period between 1979 and about 1988 when I didn't produce very much, when I didn't do very much art at all, in large part because I had a family to raise, and my husband had changed careers. And many of us know how that is, and we had some real stresses about money in our lives, and so I was employed full time, and it didn't leave much time or energy to do art when you're taking care of a family and having a career. When I came back to the studio in 1988 full time, and that's a really fun story. Our kids, had graduated from high school and were at the University of California. And they were home for I want to say it was some sort of holiday or some sort of week break or something. And they said, Mom, we have something to tell you. We'd like a family meeting. And I thought, oh, God, here it goes. You know, one of them's pregnant or they're doing drugs or they're getting kicked out of school or whatever it is. And so we had this family meeting, and they said, well, we've been looking over the years and trying to figure out what was going on with you, and we think it's time for you to go back in the studio full time. And I said, well, I don't know how I can do this. And they said, well, we've talked with Dad, and we're all going to help. The family has been very, very supportive. I've also been very fortunate to be able to sell my work. So that has helped a lot, too. But back to the series question. Beginning in 1991, I started on a series called Plastic Flowers in a Mexican Graveyard. And that became a body of work of about 25 pieces. And when I was a very small child, between the ages of 4 and 16, I lived in Mexico. My parents were sort of part-time expats right after the war, and my father was a deep-sea fisherman, and we ran a fishing resort, or it was really a camp at that time, in Baja California, and I fell in love with Mexico, and it took me until I was in my 50s to really, really experience the colors and the feelings, and not experience, but express the feelings and the colors and the whole thing. And that was my first one-woman traveling show, and that traveled all over the United States. And the piece that was at the American Folk Art Museum in the Sapa show was bought by the American Folk Art Museum. And it was called, something of lost, Lost Childhood, I can't remember, but it was a really, really phenomenal piece that I had by that time used a lot of embroidery in as well, because I was very interested in the colcha embroidery that Mexicans do, and I learned how to translate that into machine embroidery. So the next series I started was, it really was based on ethnic themes. And during that period of time when I was working on the ethnic series, my husband and I went to Australia and lived for almost a year. And I came back just loaded with ideas and materials for that. In about 2004 or 5, I am an avid gardener, discovered that I could no longer garden. And I started making garden quilts. I had already been working on the seasonal series, but I really turned my seasonal quilts into garden quilts, quilts with big flowers on them and big plants and all of that sort of stuff. I know that's a complicated answer.
No, it's a good answer. And I love the story about your children. It's very touching.
My kids are really great.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
They're really, really great. So occasionally I give them a quilt when they're really good. So
is September typical of your work?
It's certainly typical of my new work. And it really reaches back to the pieces that I did for, I was invited by the curator of the American Museum of, it used to be called the American Craft Museum, but I American Museum of Architects, David McFadden, to do a show at Chautauqua, at the Chautauqua Gallery in Chautauqua, New York. And that's when that whole seasonal kind of thing started. And I did a four-piece series called Lake Effect, which I absolutely loved. Unfortunately, it did not get into Quilt National. That's all right. There were a lot of good things in that year. But I worked more than one series at a time. But it's always, one piece always builds on another. One piece always informs my work for the next piece. And I try very hard not to turn out things that are cookie cutter. In 1995, I was commissioned by the Children's Hospital in Denver to create a series for them. I went to Children's Hospital working with the donor and looked through and found all of the things that I really felt were significant about the symbols and designs that they had used at Children's Hospital, how I could do something that would be comforting and helpful to not only the children, but the parents who were there. And I developed a series called Lifelines, which were hands reaching towards spirals. And I used spirals and even crosses. Circles and all kinds of universal symbols in it. That five-piece series was a collaboration with Leslie Morgan in England. Leslie and I created fabric together. I went over to her digs a little south of London. In the middle of the winter, where it was bitter cold, we worked at her garage to create enough fabric to make these five huge pieces. And then I brought them back, and then I did the Lifelines quilts. And those pieces fed on another series that I still occasionally do. I just made one of those, as a matter of fact, which I'll tell you about in just a second. But those quilts have ended up in hospitals, like the University of Kansas Medical Center. And they've been bought by two embassies, which has been really, really fun to have them. And it's another further opportunity for travel. I get to go see my quilts in wonderful places. There's one in Tunis right now, in Tunisia. But let me go to the one that I've just finished and sent off. It was actually a gift for some friends, Dawn and Lynn Bunas. Lynn was one of my very best students. And both Dawn and Lynn they had retired to Scotland from Washington, D.C., where we previously lived before came to Colorado. And they were both diagnosed with cancer during the same month of March. And I went to 20 of our closest friends and family and asked them for traces of their hands to put onto this quilt for Don and Lynn. And I had enough hand-dyed material at that point to really do it and have 20 different colors of hands on the quilt and sent it off to them. And Lynn passed away on August 8th. And she was under the quilt when she died, which was really, really wonderful. And I do still work on things that, you know, I hearken back to old series to bring something new into it.
So tell me more about getting your work into hospitals. How did that come about?
I generally work with art consultants, and they're mysterious. The ways that they work are very mysterious. But hospitals like Kaiser. I don't know whether you guys have Kaiser in Illinois. The Kaiser Permanente hospitals. They have committees of hospital employees and doctors and nurses who choose the hospital. And they have a call for entry, and they ask, you know, they're looking generally for work from local artists, which is really terrific. And in case you've noticed, the art market stinks, but they're still building hospitals. And I really feel that the accessibility of quilts is very comforting to people. It's really healing. And it's something that everybody understands. Everybody has a quilt in their background. So, you know, it's one of those, it's just one of those things. It seems such a natural. There are big companies like American Art Resources that deal only with hospitals. And they do art in many, many hospitals all over the United States. And they have a person who especially buys quilts, who doesn't look for, you know, anything else but quilts. So that's pretty neat. So I try to ingratiate myself with those people. How's that for a word?
That's a good word. So you called, you know, fiber the medium of your heart.
Absolutely.
So tell me about your interest in quilt making.
Well, my mother was a quilt maker. My mother, I come from a Western family. My father was born in California, but his parents, well, his father was a Californian. In fact, my grandfather was born in California. But my grandmother, my father's mother, was the daughter of Jewish merchants who were in the provisioning business, who followed the gold fields. And she was born in Montana in the late 1880s. It must have been a really wild, gluten-tootin' kind of place. But she knew how to sew. She didn't do it much, but she did know how to sew. Then I had a great aunt in San Francisco who was a wonderful, wonderful seamstress, and I loved to go visit her. But my mother came from a Mormon family, Mormon pioneers, from northern Utah, and everybody knew how to sew and quilt. I mean, that was part of the culture. It was also a necessity because, you know, they had no ready money. They were very poor. She had six sisters. They all quilted. And part of it was because they liked to talk, and they really dished during the period of time that they were together with a quilting frame. It was just amazing. I heard, you know, gossip about the family, which I would have never heard if I hadn't been, you know, a little kid who was fascinated by quilting. And they always let me, you know, participate if I wanted to. And that's true with some of my cousins as well. They also learned how to quilt the same way. My mother came from a family of 14 children, and I have 96 first cousins. So, you know, some days I'm not even sure when I run into somebody with the right name or from the right place. You know, if they look like the family somewhat, I'm probably related. So, but I grew up making quilts. I grew up sewing. My mother used to tell a story about my running a sewing machine needle through my finger, you know, when I was 6 years old, first time I was on the sewing machine. And I went and taped it up, and I went back and sat back down to the sewing machine. Now, I don't exactly remember that, but she is absolutely certain that that happened. I can remember in our home in San Francisco that the sewing machine sat in the dining room, looking out onto the street, a window onto the street, and it had pride of place. It was one of the most important things in the house was the sewing machine. And she made all of my clothes. She made my brother's shirt. She didn't make his trousers. And then because the Mormon church has a big welfare program for, I think, really they distribute to a lot of people, but certainly to women themselves. They had a whole sewing kind of factory in San Francisco where they would make things like trousers and shirts and on industrial machines, and women would go down on Saturdays and Sundays, or on Saturdays, and work. You had specific time to go do that. So there was this real sense of you had to provide for your neighborhood, and you had to provide for the people around you. And I, that's part of quilting, that's part of sharing as well. You provide for others. You rarely make a quilt for yourself. You always make a quilt for someone else. So.
What is your first quilt memory?
Sorry?
What is your first quilt memory?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea. I can remember, though, that in one of the church groups that I made a quilt with butterflies on it. I had embroidered butterflies on a block, and when the quilt was put together, somebody had over-embroidered the butterflies. And I was so angry. I was just furious. She interfered with my artistic vision of my butterfly. And I could, you know, I must have been about, you know, 10 or something. I can still remember that. But I still have all the quilts that I made for my kids when they were babies. I tried to give them to them, but they say, oh, well, we'll get them someday. But I've always made, so I have no idea. I've always given away. And I have rarely counted. I've counted the quilts that I have sold, because that has been important. But, you know, other things, I have no idea. Since about, 1985 or so, I've photographed every quilt. No, not every quilt, most every quilt. Little things I don't photograph. And I've been working smaller and smaller these days. But I'm going to have to start photographing those as well, because they're very detailed.
Well, September is 32 by 56.
Yeah, it's a big quilt.
So is that pretty typical? I mean,
well, it was. It's a good size for me to work in. I have a much smaller studio than I did a year ago. We moved from our house in Boulder that we lived in for 19 years a year ago, quite by accident. I have a studio that's only about, 12 by 14 now, the size of a big bedroom kind of thing. My studio in Boulder was 960 square feet, and I have room for six people to work in it. You know, six machines set up, and, you know, so I could teach classes in it. And so I could produce very large things. The quilt that hangs in the Red Rocks Museum and Visitor Center in Morrison, Colorado. It's part of the city of Denver at the big Red Rocks Amphitheater. That is a three-piece installation, and it's 11 feet long. So I could work on things like that in the big studio. Now, if I were to work on a piece that was that big these days, I would have to rent space. I just don't have enough room anymore to do it.
Has that been a difficult transition?
I'm sorry?
Has it been a difficult transition?
Not at all. It's actually been delightful in a very strange way. I was feeling with all of the space that I had to teach all the time and that I had to have students there all the time. And it's just been wonderful to say, I don't need to do this anymore. And that has been interesting, and I haven't missed it, really. I have cherished going out teaching more. I taught 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago in Vermont. I taught a master class for a group of 20. art quilters, and it was just absolutely wonderful because I wasn't dragging my attention away from, you know, my studio students or my studio classes. I was completely prepared and able to really work with them. Next week I go to Cape Cod for a week to teach. I really picked that place, I can tell you. It's really too bad to go to Cape Cod in September. Jeez. Can't wait to go, actually. I believe it'll be the same kind of experience that I am truly ready to go out teaching, because I haven't had to have all my energies taken away from those classes by having students in studio all the time. So it's going to be a different thing if I get, you know, another commission this year. And I, you know, that's to be seen whether I will be doing that.
Now, you mentioned FACWA, which mm-hmm. is the Studio Art Quilt Associates, and you mentioned that you have an art group show this weekend. Tell me about the groups you belong to. And
well, I belong to FACWA. I've been a member ever since it started, because Libby Lehman said I had to, and Libby can be very persuasive. I find it a wonderful organization and very, very supportive. However, the last couple of years, because of lots of health problems, I haven't been very involved. I am also one of the founding members of Front Range Contemporary Quilters, and I was their second president, and I was also their eighth president. We had some problems a couple of years ago. I was the member at large on the board, and our president moved to Canada, and our vice president moved to Wisconsin. So we had to do a big shuffle, and I was the only one without a real job, so I ended up as president again. And that is a terrific, terrific organization. It was set up as an art quilt guild. We have about 300 members, and we draw from both sides of the Front Range, or both sides of the Rocky Mountains. And we also have members in Kansas, Wyoming, Nebraska, and people come a long, long way to come to our meetings, which is great. And then I've been a member of a group called Peacemakers for the last, we've been together, I think, 19 years. There are 12 of us. Our membership has been real stable during this period of time. And we meet once a month. Our time together is absolutely sacred, if it can be said. We have a set way of doing things. We talk about a lot of issues, a lot of things that are on our minds that don't relate to quilt making. We do a formal critique, and we eat and drink together, which is great. And we go on retreat together once a year. Other members of Peacemakers are Patty Hawkins, who won the Quilt Japan Prize last year, and Faye Anderson, who is one of the absolute deans of American quilt making. She's been around forever. Let's see, we also think of Charlotte Zebarth, whose quilt is going to be on the cover of the Visions Catalog this year. Patty's quilt was on the cover 2 years ago. Let's see, Betsy Cannon, who is a wonderful, wonderful, whimsical quilt maker. Anyway, there are 12 of us. We're all pretty high-powered. We have a lot of egos that we have to set aside during the time that we work together. And it's been an interesting evolution. And we've learned to work with each other and be one another's best friends and really be one another's champions over the last 19 years. If any one of us were to be gone, it would be a huge hole. Two of our members are in their 80s. One is 85, one is 84. And Diana Bunnell, who is 84, is in very fragile health. And we worry about her all the time, whether we're going to leave her. I don't know how we would close that hole, frankly. So those are the groups I belong to. I also belong to, I live in a new urban community just south of Longmont, Colorado, and it's colorful. I'm looking at a house right now out the window that is red and forest green and white and yellow. It's just absolutely gorgeous. We have a small artist association here that I belong to, but it's not just quilt makers. It's the Prospect Artist Association. There is one other quilt maker in it, and that's Denise Labadie. And she also goes by Denise Snell. She makes quilts of stone monoliths. And she was in Quilt National a couple of years ago. She was of early in her career. She was one of my students. So there's a lot of, this is a very, very rich place for fiber arts, this part of Colorado. Actually, all of Colorado is. And it's just great. I would hate to leave here because I would feel that I had, you know, part of my soul cut out being away from all these people who inspire me constantly.
Whose works are you drawn to and why?
You know, Karen, I'm having trouble hearing your questions from time to time.
Sorry about that. Whose works are you drawn to and why?
Interesting question. Well, I love Joan Blumenthal's work. And I lived in Carbondale, Illinois for many years when Joan was still there. I left long before Joan did. But watched her career over the years and watched her work evolve. And I love her garden, and I love her leaves, and I love what she does and the richness of her vision. I must say that I love Susie Scheid's work because it's so whimsical. There's a certain honesty about it that I just find just fascinating. Patty Hawkins' work is always inspirational to me. And from time to time we tread on each other because we're both interested in landscape and trees and things like that. We try very hard to not do the same thing all the time because we're around each other all the time. I'm not as familiar with any of the new quilters who aren't quilters, because I've sort of withdrawn from the scene during the last few years. I don't compete anymore. So I don't always get around to see what's going on. I love Hollis Chatelain's work, but I find that so painterly, it's hard for me to envision that as quilt work or textile. But I know it is. I love the subject matter of her quilts. A lot of my influences come from some of these people, and certainly my early influence came from Libby and her encouragement, but her head-on way of just approaching and tackling problems and tackling design problems. I like the way she did it. I still like the way she does it.
Do you think of yourself more as an artist or a quilt maker, or do you even make a distinction?
I don't make a distinction. I really don't. I'm not very fussy about the title, but if somebody does ask me what I do, I say I'm an artist. It's easier. People understand art better. And then if they ask me what my medium is, I say it's fiber. I still find that people don't understand the Q word, whether quilts are supposed to be art or whether they're supposed to be something for the bad. But I've also decided that it really doesn't matter. It certainly doesn't matter in my life.
How do you want to be remembered?
Oh, God. Oh, that I made beautiful things that made people happy.
I'm shaking my head. You don't see that.
And that I was a warm, helpful person and a good teacher.
Tell me a little bit more about your teaching.
I love to teach. Absolutely love to teach. And I come from a family of teachers. My husband is a professor at the university, University of Colorado. My son is a professor of astronomy in a university in the Netherlands. My grandmother, my father's mother, was a teacher. She went back to school at age 45, which people just didn't do in those years, and got her California teaching credential. And she taught music. And it seems to me that I just got the gene somehow. Unfortunately, I didn't go into teaching immediately after high school or after college, because in those days, the two things that a woman could be was a teacher, or three things, a teacher, a nurse, or a secretary. Well, I ended up being a secretary. So I didn't want to be in a typical female occupation, but here I am. I just find there is something wonderful about the communication between one of my students and one of, and myself. It's just so incredible. It's like this incredible give and take, this incredible emptying of one's soul and one's knowledge. And in a way, that is the only way that one could be remembered, is by what one passes on. And those things that you learn from someone else, someone else teaches you, that you can pass on to someone else. And it's this big continuum, this big circle. I absolutely adore my students. They keep coming back year after year after year. For 13 years, I taught in my studio with weekly residential students. I had students who would come stay with us. We had designed our house so it had two different suites in it for guest suites, and then our private areas, and then the studio. And so they lived, they sort of lived apart from us, but they took all of their meals with us. My husband's a wonderful cook, and so he, was relishing doing this, but we sort of got worn out after 13 years. And students just worked with me for a whole week. And they worked on their ideas, and I helped them develop their ideas. And I had about six of those students a year in the early days. Towards the end, I had 8 or 10 a year, which was a whole lot. But I try to just guide the student. I try to find what the student really wants, and how the student, and try to help the student express what it is that they want and that they want to express. I know that's redundant. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
But it's hard sometimes for people to really understand what they want to express. They try really, really hard, but they don't have the tools or the vocabulary to really get it out. And sometimes it's as simple as having people doodle, or sometimes it's as simple as having them, if they're afraid to draw, write a small story, and then pick out the elements of whatever it is in that small story or that small doodle that's important. and we work from there.
What advice would you offer someone starting out?
Oh, starting out?
Mm-hmm. Making art quilts.
Take as many quilts as you can. Take as many classes as you can. And it doesn't matter whether they're traditional classes or art quilt classes or any kind of classes. And the other thing that I would advise very strongly is that the young quilter or the beginning quilter go take a drawing class. Just a traditional drawing class. Junior high school or junior colleges all over the world have them. And, you know, don't think of yourself in terms of being able to draw or not being able to draw. It's the experience and the discipline of doing it that is really, really, really important. And that drawing class will see you through so much. And what it does is help you organize things. It helps you start from one point and get you through the drawing to the end. That, you know, it's just one of the absolute, as far as I'm concerned. And I really didn't understand how important that was, even though I had studied painting in college. And then when I went back to get my MFA in 1995, I was forced into taking a drawing class again. And it probably, out of all the classes that I took during that period of time, that was the most important one. It was just the idea of clarifying my vision. And I think that that is just, you know, it's a skill. Anybody can learn how to draw. It is not something that you have innate talent for, because I have none. But you can learn the ways to do it. But it also gives you something to look at, a way of seeing, and a beginning and an end. And I think that that's what happens sometimes when we make quilts. We don't know where to begin. And once we've begun, we don't know how to end it.
Well, we've been talking now for almost 45 minutes, so I always like to ask people, is there anything that you would like to share before we conclude that I haven't touched upon? I'm sorry?
Don't ever stop working. Whatever the circumstances are, don't stop making art. If you are challenged and can no longer physically make what you made at one time, find another way of working. Find another way to make art. And it can be as simple as, you know, making tiny little things or making tiny little books or drawing something, learning to watercolor. It's really, really important to keep doing it because it keeps you alive. And it's just a phenomenal thing to happen.
Well, Judith, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day.
You're very welcome.
And we are going to conclude our interview at 11:49.